Awesome. So we welcome on Tyler James, who covers Notre Dame football and recruiting and more for Inside ND Sports on the Rivals Network. How's it going, Tyler?
It's going well. We're here. It's slow part for football, I suppose, but we're in the middle of getting ramped up for a pretty busy recruiting season. So there hasn't been a lot of time to catch our breath this off season, but once we get to July, we'll have a little bit of a break there and then get right back into the season. It's been a pretty crazy, pretty crazy 7 months or six. So 7 months since the end of November when Brian Kelly left Notre Dame.
Yeah, that probably threw a little bit of both a wrench and an opportunity for all of the beat writers in terms of the amount of content that you probably unexpectedly were going to be covering.
Yeah. December was crazy. And particularly so for Eric Hansen and I, when we were making the transition or preparing for the transition to the Rivals Network from the South Bend Tribune for our new website, Inside ND Sports, with knowing that we were going to start that on January 1st. We wanted to give the Tribune as much of us as we could. So, I mean, I legitimately worked December 31st for the South Bend Tribune. And then on the 1st, I worked for Inside ND Sports. Like I was out in Arizona doing coverage for the Tribune. And then the next day, the day of the game, I was doing coverage for Rivals. So, yeah, it was a pretty wild December. I mean, we had hoped to have much more things aligned. I mean, we wanted to have a recruiting reporter in place. But that we just didn't have the time to sort of make all those things happen because it was a hectic time of covering Notre Dame football.
Yeah. Well, you know, with being so busy, I appreciate you kind of making some time, you know, for me today. And, you know, the real goal here is to kind of take a little bit of a peek behind the curtain and your role as a Notre Dame beat writer. And so far the working title for this series right now is The Beat on ND's Beat. And so curious if you think that sounds good to you.
Yeah, I think that works. The Beat on ND's Beat. I mean, there's probably some sort of pun that I could come up with if I was given some time to think about it. But I think that works.
Yeah, that's the working title we're going to go with for now. And you know, if it changes, we'll probably see when this comes out. But for now, it's the first edition of the Beat on ND's Beat. And the first question that I have for you is, I was looking over an article that was, you know, singing your praises, I want to say a couple months back, that referenced you as the pancake maker. I'd love to hear a little bit of background about how that nickname came to be.
Well, first, it's not a nickname. That was just a clever headline that was used. I was never called the pancake maker. No, I played offensive line and it was a nickname that spawned well before I was even a high school football player. But some of my closer friends would call me T-Bone. So that would be the only nickname that I would have had. But Pancake Maker was certainly not one of them. But yeah, I mean, I was inducted into the Port Slicer Football Hall of Fame recently. And that was pretty crazy. I mean, like I've had people like come up to me and say, hey, congrats on the Hall of Fame. And that just feels really weird for someone to be saying that to me. There was some coverage of that going into it. And I was pretty fortunate that I had some knee issues in high school. So I only really played one full season of RC football as a senior. And we were really good. But my senior year, we were the first team in school history to win the sectional and regional, and we got absolutely smoked it in semi-state at Carmel. But it was a really cool season. I got some accolades. I think that had a lot to do with people knowing my name because my dad is a longtime high school football coach as an assistant coach. And so it was really kind of cool to go back to La Porte. And I mean, I go there frequently because I don't live too far from there and I have a lot of friends there, but to go back and sort of relive some of the high school days and catch up with some guys I haven't seen in a long time. So it's been kind of a nostalgic summer for me. So I guess not summer, late spring for me so far.
Yeah. Well, I'm bummed to hear that wasn't the official name. I think T-Bone is also a pretty good one, but kind of digging into that a little bit. It's obviously that you were, even though you didn't play too long, you still went through, or maybe I'll ask, did you go through some type of recruiting process as you ended up making your way towards DePaul? DePaul, sorry, not DePaul.
Yeah. So after that season, it maybe there was some during the season, but I don't quite remember that. But I started getting mail from like smaller schools, like Division III schools and Division II schools, and so my dad sort of helped me sort of weed out all the schools that he knew were just bad, like the football programs were just bad. Like, you don't want to go here, you don't want to go here. And so we sort of went through those, and I went on some college visits. I went to Valpo University, which was obviously not very far from LaPorte, Indiana, and visited there. I visited Carthage College in Wisconsin. It's on Lake Michigan. And then I also visited, obviously, DePaul. And I think those were the three, like, college football visits. At that point, I mean, I hadn't really like I mentioned, I hadn't played a full varsity season until my senior year. So it wasn't really in my head that I would play college football until I had that success. It's like, okay, maybe this is something I could do. And so then it took me a while to decide if that's what I wanted to do, play college football, or just go to like IU and go into the media school or whatever. Cause I did know that I wanted to get into sports writing. That was something that I sort of, a teacher in high school suggested to me in my junior year. And so I said, hey, that sounds like a decent idea, even though my dad's a math teacher and I feel like I'm naturally gifted at math, but I'm like, well, let's see if I can be around sports. That's a good excuse for me. But anyways, I made those visits, and then it was interesting to sort of go through that. I mean, coaches, like the college coaches, would come to the school and talk to you. It was certainly like the experience of having to tell coaches no was certainly something that was kind of intimidating, I think. But I mean, certainly all the stuff that I went through doesn't even compare to the stuff that these guys are going through. I mean, we're talking about after my senior season of high school. So I was trying to make all these decisions within a few months, which is how recruiting used to work back in the day, but that's not what it's like anymore. I mean, these guys are sophomores visiting schools and being on people's radars, and that certainly wasn't me.
Yeah, even though you didn't have an extensive recruiting experience, has your experience, at least going through some portion of the process, impacted at all the way that you both talk to or cover recruiting and recruits themselves?
I don't know that I would say that necessarily. I mean, I guess I have sort of an understanding of what they're going through, but I think I've probably gained that more through covering recruiting than like personally just myself, my own experience as a high school football player and a college football player. So I feel like that is sort of where I've come to. I mean, obviously you sort of get the perspective of a player, and I'd like to think I'm pretty relatable, although the older I get, the less relatable potentially. But I sort of understand what they're going through, and I try to give them the benefit of that. Like, I know, like, for instance, like, fans would be upset if kids want to visit other schools and stuff like that. I was like, listen, they only get to do this once. This is arguably one of the biggest decisions of your life. You should be able to sort of take advantage of whatever opportunities you have to do that. So I sort of come from that. Maybe that makes me biased. I don't know. Like, I guess I sort of side with the recruit in a lot of these situations because they're going through something as young adults or even children in some cases, and start trying to navigate this. And some people have good support systems around them that can help them. Some people don't. So I think it's all those things sort of come together to sort of like guide sort of my perspective of recruiting. And I think, honestly, like when I first started covering recruiting, I mean, that was my first responsibility as a writer at the South Bend Tribune, was to cover Notre Dame football recruiting. I had no insight into like the recruiting world, like what the rules were, any of that stuff. Like I didn't follow recruiting as a sports fan. So it was sort of a whole new animal that I was just sort of learning about, and it's very interesting to me. I've grown to appreciate that, and that played a role in sort of us deciding to go to Rivals, because Rivals obviously values that. We felt like it wasn't being as valued at the South Bend Tribune, not necessarily by the folks at the Tribune, but the ownerships above, above the Tribune and some of the decisions that were made. I guess that's, I'm kind of rambling now, but that's sort of my perspective on the recruiting and sort of where I guess I come from when I'm covering it.
No, it seems that you've struck a pretty good balance, especially as it can be difficult because you probably have, you know, quite a lot of adults who, you know, have very strong opinions about what, you know, anywhere from 16 to 18 year old kids are doing, when ultimately it's a crazy decision that's, you have to look at what's best for themselves. And so when you're actually talking to and covering recruits, do you ever feel kind of a push and pull with your relationship as someone who wants the best interest and looks out for the best interest of the kid versus, you know, what types of articles and things that you're putting out that, you know, fans are craving and pushing back towards?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some of that. I think you want to, I think it's always important to try to be fair to the kid, mm-hmm. Try to give them the chance to speak and speak to what's going on. I mean, I'd like to think I am willing to be critical about a kid's ability and what I think of him as a player. I'm not going to be like as harsh as I would as watching Mike Glennon play quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
Don't bring that up. I blocked it out.
But yeah, I mean, I'm willing to give my opinions. I mean, and be transparent with that to the kids too. If they like say, like if I will do a film study on a kid and say, hey, can I see this? I'm not going to say, well, I didn't say nice things about you, so I don't want to send it to you. I'll still send it to them. And if they, one person I remember specifically, it was about Jameer Jones. And he played a lot of linebacker in high school. And I said, I think he's more likely to be a defensive end, and was sort of, I don't know if critical is the right way to say it, but just sort of getting at, like, I'm not sure like he's going to be a linebacker long term. And some kids might take offense to that, but he's like, I agree with you. So that was kind of cool that he sort of, and obviously that sort of played out that way. He ended up being a defensive end towards the end of his Notre Dame career as well.
So I'll give you, he should give you a cut of his paycheck then for this upcoming NFL season.
I take no credit.
Cool. So you mentioned that in high school, one of your teachers said that, you know, sports writing could be a thing for you. Kind of taking a step before then, was there a certain point or age where, not even sports writing in particular, but sports just started to take over or consume a large portion of your brain?
Oh yeah. I mean, ever since I can remember, I mean, sports have been a huge part of my life. I mean, obviously I mentioned my dad's a high school football coach, and he has been my whole life. And so I would hang out at the football stadium, going to practice, just hanging around with the other kids of the coaches, and being around that, but also like watching SportsCenter 3 times in the same morning. I think a lot of kids watched a ton of cartoons as a kid. But I was watching SportsCenter. I'd certainly watch some cartoons as well, but I would watch SportsCenter, watch sports, get invested in obviously sort of the teams that were passed down from my family. Mostly the Chicago teams, Blackhawks, White Sox. I mean, it was less Blackhawks then. Blackhawks became more of a bigger thing when I got older, when they were actually good, but, huge Bulls fan, and obviously a suffering Bears fan. I was hugely invested in sports, and that's sort of how that came about, where the teacher didn't actually say you should get into sports writing. He said, have you ever considered getting into writing? And it was funny, 'cause it was a class. His name is Greg Fruth. It was a class. It was like honors juniors English was the class. And my parents going into my junior year said, you're taking this class. I said, no, I'm not. I hate English. Like that was the first B I ever got in school was in an English class. So I was like, I don't want to take this class. And they forced me to do it. And that sort of led me to this. And Mr. Fruth was a former football coach as well. So I had known him as well. And he sort of nudged me towards writing. And anytime we would get writing prompts that we could sort of come up with what we wanted to do, I would sort of write about sports. And so that was sort of how I sort of got into that. But yeah, I've been sports obsessed for as long as I can remember.
That's it's great to hear. And I think with probably kids now, and again, I'm 30 years old and I'm using the phrase kids now, but it's all highlights and everything is now at your fingertips, where before it was you watch SportsCenter to know what happened in the sports throughout the day. So I had a similar experience as that growing up, where, you know, I was digging into the Chicago Tribune to figure out what happened the night before and then watching SportsCenter. So it's great to hear that, you know, someone else had that same experience. And, you know, a question I have for you, were you were you an Notre Dame fan? I mean, in like growing up?
No, I was not. I was not a Notre Dame fan. It's been interesting to cover them, because some people will be like, what's it like to work for Notre Dame? I was like, well, I don't work for Notre Dame. I work to cover Notre Dame. Like, it's a job. Obviously there are people at Notre Dame that I appreciate and grow close with and like, as you go through this process, but I wasn't a Notre Dame fan. Especially early on when I started covering Notre Dame, I was like, give me whatever like historical books I can read about it. Cause I just don't have like the encyclopedic knowledge that many people that would have grown up Notre Dame fans would have. I have giant like blank spots in like Notre Dame history that I would just know so very little about, but obviously the longer I do this, the more you sort of come across different names and games and stuff like that. And I actually enjoyed during COVID doing some projects, like diving into some historical, like best quarterbacks of all time and watching some old games on YouTube, or I don't know if they ended up streaming some of the games or whatever, or put some on TV even. Cause I think I watched the Florida State game, the 93 Florida State game, for the very first time. Like, I'd never seen that game before. I come from this not as an educated longtime Notre Dame fan, but someone who is grown to sort of appreciate and I feel like better understand the program than I sort of ever would have before starting this job.
It's really interesting, because I feel that Notre Dame fans in general, being as passionate as that they are, assume that the writers have the same level of fandom versus the more professional nature of what you do. And so, kind of moving into that realm, you don't have to dig in too deep of this, but I'm curious what you'd want people to know about your kind of day-to-day writing job at Rivals that might surprise them.
I don't know what would surprise. I sort of just try to approach everything as like I want to tell the story as fairly as possible. Obviously, like, I have my own opinions based on observations or what I know that people maybe don't know, or that I can't necessarily report on, but I have heard information on. So all those things sort of impact your writing and reporting in some way. But I mean, my goal is sort of present things as I believe they are. And obviously, if I'm taking an opinion on it or doing some sort of analysis, then it's more like based on what I'm doing. But some people might think like, well, you're just writing this to get clicks or something like that. It's like, well, I feel like that would be exhausting to me if like I was only like changing my opinions based on what I felt like would get the most clicks. Like, I just don't know how I could keep up with those kinds of things. But as a sports fan, I enjoy hearing the stories about athletes and some of the stuff they're dealing with and their personal stories and what they're going through to get better, how they get better, and those kinds of things. So those are the stories I enjoy telling and trying to find different ways to tell them, different people to talk to. I really enjoy getting to know people and interview them. So it's not a lot of glitz and glamour. Like, it's a really cool job. I would never deny that. But I mean, I just like now, like, we don't have an office. Like, Eric and I work from home. We certainly got used to that during COVID, but before that even happened, like, I wasn't in the Tribune's office building every day when I was working, because you need to be out in the field doing certain things, and it's easier just to go home sometimes and write. So it's the one downside is like it's never ending. Like, you never know what's going to happen. Like, it's a legitimately 24/7 news cycle. You could have something like, and that's where you need to have good coworkers, so you can sort of schedule like, hey, if I got something important going on in my personal life, like, can you handle if something happens today or whatever? Like, kids will announce commitments on holidays, which if I could speak to parents of recruits, it would be, do not let your kids do that. Think of us, like, we have to spend time on our holidays because someone wants to announce, like, that's one of my biggest pet peeves, I would say, of the recruiting process. But that's like the one downside of the job is like, your schedule is very unpredictable. Obviously, you're going to be working lots of nights and weekends. And so you, sort of dedicate a significant portion of your life to that. But I enjoy it. I don't have any regrets about that. It's certainly fun to do. But yeah, you feel like sometimes like people want answers from you all the time, every day. And it's like, hey, I just want to watch some TV for a little bit. I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you, you know? So it's a great job. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about it, because I do enjoy it. And it's the only job I've had and something I decided I wanted to do in high school. And it's been, I've been very blessed and fortunate to be able to do that.
No, it's super insightful. And I want to make a statement on hopefully behalf of the majority of the fans that I don't think we appreciate you all enough for the amount of time and the amount of hours that you put in, and especially the off hours, like you mentioned, because, you know, I write for One Foot Down. I write, you know, an article or two a week. They're scheduled. I know what the topic's going to be. It's at my own pace. And so for you guys to be, you know, pivoting at the drop of a hat or out somewhere in some news breaks, I just want to say thank you, because a lot of us probably don't have the true appreciation for how much time and effort goes into it. And so just that's a blanket thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, it's the trade-off we make for doing a job that lots of people would want to do, I think, is sort of the way I look at it. Like, I get to travel the country covering Notre Dame football games, going to places I've never been before, and get paid for it and not have to pay for it. It's certainly a great experience.
Just kind of taking a little bit of a different path here. It's clear that the South Bend is a Notre Dame town, to say the least. And so, you know, I'm curious, as you go about your day-to-day life, I think the beat writers are pretty well known and are pretty recognizable. Do you get people coming up to you and asking you for scoops or kind of intruding on your personal life, or how does that work being a, you know, I'm going to call you a quasi, you know, quasi celebrity in South Bend, among the locals?
That doesn't happen very often. People won't just like come up out of nowhere. I mean, the times that people will come up and say something or like yell something, usually like around Notre Dame events, like when you're, say if we're walking to the field in the fourth quarter and we're walking down the stadium steps or whatever, someone will see us and yell your name or whatever. There certainly have been interactions, like I'm at the tire place and the guy's like, oh yeah, are you the guy that's on, well, I used to do a lot of work with the local radio station. Are you the guy that's on SportsBeat? I was like, yeah, that's me. And then, so that's kind of cool to hear that people sort of associate you with that. And that was sort of fascinating too, because I think there's a lot of people that will read the people could read the newspaper pretty regularly. And I don't know how often they necessarily pay attention to the bylines. But then if your voice is attached to something, like I've had people recognize my voice or recognize it, been around Eric when people recognize Eric's voice. So people certainly recognize Eric much more than they do me. I mean, he's been in town much longer and has a much more illustrious career than I do. But yeah, I mean, there's some moments like that, but nothing has ever been like anything strange or anything uncomfortable. I sort of feel bad because some people will like say, hey, I just want to say I appreciate what you do, and then just sort of walk away. And I was like, well, can you tell me your name? I don't know, like, I'd like to know something about you too.
Yeah.
Like, but I feel like people just want to just say hello and they feel like they're bothering you. So, but yeah, no, there's nothing too crazy. Like I'm not worrying about when I'm going to the grocery store because people are going to stop me in line or anything like that. That's not how it's been for me.
Cool. That's pretty interesting. You mentioned Eric Hansen. Is Eric Hansen your best friend?
I wouldn't say my best friend, but he's certainly my best friend in the business, for no doubt. I mean, we're obviously, we've worked closely together for a long time, but now starting a business together, we're even closer. but yeah, I mean, we talk all the time. I talk to him probably more than I talk to anybody, I would think. I mean, just because when we're working, we're talking usually daily, multiple times a day, and always on the same page with those kinds of things. And so, yeah, but we're really close. We have a good relationship. Certainly, I think Eric's pretty easy to get along with. I'd like to think I'm pretty easy to get along with. So I think we work together well. And that's, I think people can sort of get a sense for that when they listen to us on a podcast. Like we're like just genuinely having conversations with each other. And it's not something forced in any way. Like it's like some of those conversations that would come up on a podcast, we would have off the podcast just naturally because we're talking about these same things all the time.
Cool. And I know we're winding down here. So just a couple quick hitters and then one final question. So the first kind of quick hitter is, if you could cover any college football team other than ND, who would you pick?
I guess I'd probably just say Alabama, just because, I mean, to cover Nick Saban, I think that'd be fascinating, just to a program that's done what they've done. So I think I would probably just, I'd want to cover the best to sort of experience what that was like. So I would say Alabama.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be pretty fun also just living in Tuscaloosa. You think Notre Dame's a football town, but I feel like that's a whole different world.
Yeah, exactly.
Next little quick hitter. If the Dinos offered you a contract, would you move across the world to write for them?
To cover the Dinos, I think that would be tough. I don't, the language barrier would be a bit of a tough one. So I think I'd probably pass. I'd see if they maybe could get me maybe a vacation or something. Maybe that could work out. I could do like a fellowship for a couple weeks or something like that.
Well, and then the last question here, but before I let you go, and I appreciate the time. This has been great. But if you could have any unfiltered discussion with any player or coach around any topic off the record regarding Notre Dame football, what might that be?
Oh man, I mean, probably the Manti Te'o stuff, right? I mean, like. I know that he would just tell me everything that was going on. Like I'd have so many questions about that. I'd love to sort of get his honest perspective of it. I think it's probably fair to say it's sort of tainted his life in some way. Tainted might be a little bit of a strong word, but like it's forever going to follow him. I don't think like he can escape that. Now he's like, he's married and has a child now, I believe. I don't think he's still playing football. Just to get some insight into that. That was probably the strangest thing I've ever covered. I remember like reading about, I think my mom was the one who saw it first and she sent it to me or said something to me. And like the feeling I got like in my stomach was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Like it was like I saw a ghost or something. It was one of the weirdest experiences. I can't really describe it. It was a bizarre experience. And I don't know that anyone totally knows every side of that story because it's just it's a very complicated one.
Especially because that was still in the relatively early days of the internet. And again, I say relatively early days of the internet because it's evolved so much. Where catfishing was. You could really get catfished back then, but it still happens now, but yeah, it just would be a super interesting conversation. So,
yeah. And that was my first season on the beat was 2012. So
easier
like that season was crazy enough. And then to have that thrown in at the end of it was wild.
Cool. And then just a last quick hitter, for the Bears fans out there. Do you believe in Justin Fields?
I do. Yes. I believe in Justin Fields. I think he's great. The Bears Chicago needs to do to help him be great because I don't think they did a lot of that previously. I'm a little bit concerned about this season because I don't know that they did a lot of the draft to necessarily help him either. But I think he's great. I still agree with the decision to trade up and draft him. Like I think he's better than any of the quarterbacks that were in this year's draft. So. We'd be stuck in the same situation if the Bears didn't draft him. So, yeah, I believe in him. I mean, maybe it won't work out, but I still have faith. I'm not ready to give up on Justin Fields.
Yeah, and Justin, I know you're listening and reading and just let you know that both Tyler James and Phil Goff believe in you, which is hopefully the extra motivation that you need. And just to close it out here, I'm assuming most people know kind of where to find you and where to read, but would love to let you plug, both your Twitter and your site and, anything else you want here in the last little bit.
Yeah. You can follow me at TJamesND on Twitter. I feel a little bit weird, like having just ND in my Twitter handle because it makes it seem like I work for ND or something, but, it was the easiest thing to do because we used to be NDI for ND Insider. So we just switched it to ND. And so I think people can still find us pretty easily. And then, Inside Indy Sports, NotreDame.rivals.com, either of those websites that both take you to the same place. The Insider Lounge is our premium message board. We're working to continue to grow that community. So if anyone wants to subscribe, we'd love to have them. And yeah, I mean, we have Inside Indy Sports account on Instagram. If you want to follow that, we have an Inside Indy Sports account on Twitter. And then we're hoping to get some more stuff on YouTube in the future. We have a podcast, Inside Indy Sports Podcast. So we're everywhere you can think of. So we hope people enjoy the stuff we're providing and are looking forward to our first season at Inside Indy Sports.
Awesome. Well, Tyler, I appreciate it. As mentioned, go follow Tyler on Twitter, subscribe to all of his stuff, and, you know, appreciate him as being a part of the first, you know, One Foot Down inaugural Beat on Beat writers. So again, thanks so much, and it's greatly appreciated.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Awesome.